Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go, Draft Knicks. Here we go. Welcome to another edition of Draft Nation. My name is Joe 412, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. Before we begin, we want to thank our longtime sponsor, iHeartMedia, where you can find all your favorite music, radio, and podcasts all for free. And for those of you who haven't listened to our show before, Draft Nation is a national e-magazine that hyper-focuses on all four major sports and the professional drafts. And this is the high time of the year for the NFL draft. So we're T-minus 7.5 days and counting. And we're going to cover a lot of that tonight with our guests. And as you guys know, those that do follow us at draftnation.com, you know that we cover all aspects of player scouting, mock drafts, free agency, salary cap revisions, and of course the needs of your favorite teams, whether it's football, baseball, hockey, or basketball, we got it all. And with me tonight, I have a frequent guest, and a guy that's in a newer position. You guys may know this, you might not know it, but you know Emmett Mann. He's from Draft 412, recently is now sort of the editor-in-chief of Draft Carolina, Draft Nation's affiliate in Charlotte and Raleigh. Emmett, welcome back to Draft Nation, and are you ready to go on the clock, my friend?
Absolutely, can't wait.
Yeah, well, look, man, we're right into it, right? We literally are in the heat of NFL draft season. And I know a lot of shows cover, mock drafts, and we go 1 through 32 and things. And I want to do something a little different tonight. I want to talk about the intrigue that we might find around the draft in various places. And so I'm going to ask some questions of you just to get your opinion on things, because I think people are talking about it, people want to know. And I think the question that's on everybody's mind is, what does the Minnesota Vikings do? Do they move up to 3? Do they move up to 4? Do they move up to 5 to get that quarterback? And if they do, what quarterback is that going to be? And who do you think may be the most likely landing spot? I understand that, the Patriots need a quarterback. We all know that. And 3 is really, really high in this game. It's really costly to get, but it's not that much more costly than 4 or 5. And the Cardinals, they need a receiver, but they might be able to trade down and trade back up like Bonnie Austinfort did last year. And, of course, at 5, you've got Harbaugh, and he's the wild card in all this. And, as we were talking to our producer, Mark Mancini, off stage, wouldn't it be crazy if he targeted J.J. McCarthy, moved down, or did some crazy things with Justin Herbert? But what are your thoughts? It looks like, even though everybody's talking about the Chicago Bears being the team that is moving the needle, they really only have 4 picks, and we already know who they're taking with the first overall. I think it's really Minnesota and what they can do in some of these spots. So let's talk about them. Who do you think they move up? Are they going to be blocked out? And is it going to go chalk 1 through 4, 1 through 5, and they're just not going to be able to get the draft capital enough to move up and do what they want to do?
I think, everyone has got Caleb Williams locked in at 1. I think everyone expects that Washington's going to stay put at 2 and take a quarterback, whether that's May or Jaden Daniels. New England at 3 will dictate the rest of the round. In poker, New England is the action card. Once they turn over their card, that'll be what, that's the first domino to fall. Do they take whomever Washington bypasses? Do they take a lineman? Because do they really have the infrastructure to support a rookie quarterback? Are they the one that trades back? We've got a new GM. We don't know how this guy's processes information, how aggressive he is, what his tendencies will be. I tend to think that they'll sit at 3 and take Drake May. And then that's when the fun starts. Obviously, Minnesota is the first one to the most likely to move up. They've got the ammunition. They have the glaring need. So I wouldn't be surprised if Minnesota goes up to 4 and takes the Michigan kid
escapes
T.J. McCarthy. Yeah. So I think that's what happens 1 through 4, and then the Chargers take Alt because again they need everything. They could go neighbors because they need receivers, but they if Minnesota doesn't jump up to four, they're definitely jumping to five. If Austin Forth is in love with Harrison, so that's when everything kind of falls into line. That's just my gut as to what's going to happen with the first five picks.
Yeah, I think you're right. I honestly I agree with everything you said there. I think it's chalk for one. I think Williams is as good as gone, even though there's recent in the last 36 hours rumblings about how Washington might be going to jump up and take him, and he's a Washington D.C. kid, right? So like there's all this. But, again, I think it's just goofy, misinformation at this point. And I do think, Daniels and May, whatever order that is, go 2 and 3. And you're right. You're at 100% bang on. I mean, the Patriots are going to stink this year. And they don't have a line to support a rookie quarterback. They bring in Brissett knowing that he can come in and really kind of, man the ship for a year and let someone tutor behind them while they rebuild the line. But ultimately too, I'm not sure next year's quarterback class is going to be very good, and unless you're sitting at the top. And when was the last time the Patriots were drafting third overall, right? Mm-hmm. So they haven't done that in two decades at least, and you've got a chance to grab a guy that could be a franchise guy, worst case scenario as a starting quarterback for you in a year, if not a starting quarterback for you sometime this year. And I think they're going to stay put. I think logic demands that, and I think that Robert Kraft has said as much. He said, quarterbacks really drive the train, and kind of setting the scene for that. So I agree with you there. I think that even though they're the action card, I think they stay put, and I really think it comes down to Monty Austin Forth. And if you look at what he did last year, trading down, trading back up, the Texans went 2 and 3, and then they was able to jump back up. I mean, I think that maybe the Cardinals are that place for Minnesota to sneak in and grab four. And I'm not sure that Denver or the Raiders, even though they need a quarterback too, have the draft capital to do that. I mean, Denver doesn't have a second round this year, so they'd be tapping what they've got last year. And even if it's sort of like a quasi, almost the same kind of trade you guys saw in Carolina last year, where it was a bunch of draft picks and they traded a receiver. There was a player trade in there, too, to Chicago. I don't know if Minnesota is willing to part with a Jordan Addison, on the way back. I also think that you're right. I mean, I think the sentiment is at number five, the Chargers have given, they've given up on Mike Williams. They traded Keenan Allen. And, now they clearly need a receiver, but do they pass up on Joe Alt? You've got, the top offensive tackle on many people's boards, staring Jim Harbaugh in the face. Jim Harbaugh, who loves the run, the run game. I really have a hard time thinking that he's going to make it to Tennessee at 7 there. But let me switch gears on you. We talked about the top of the draft and what Minnesota does. Let's go to the bottom of the draft because no one's talking about this. But there are a couple of teams way, way, way at the bottom that might want to move up to 16 where Seattle is or 20 where the Steelers are. And namely, I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you about Buffalo. Buffalo is sitting there floating around at, 27, 28. It's not going to take that much to move up. They need a receiver. And in both of those spots, there's a good chance that an A.D. Mitchell or a Brian Thomas is still going to be there. Do you see Buffalo pulling the trigger and sending a pick, to either of those two teams or someone in that range to make a splash and fill that receiver void for, Josh Allen? Or do they stick it out and they say, this is a receiver deep class and we'll pick a Ladd McConkey at the end of the round. We'll pick a Xavier Worthy at the end of the round. We'll wait it out. We're not going to move. Do you see them moving up? Are they going to be a player or are they going to stay put?
I think that they are one of two teams that I think are really likely to make some kind of move into the mid round. Themselves and the Eagles, I think, are the two most likely candidates to make a bold move from the bottom half to the mid mid part of the round. But again, that all depends on what happens with the top of the round. You know, if the much anticipated run on wide receiver doesn't materialize, that maybe the Giants at six, they go Brock Bowers, or they go and address the offensive line for the 723rd time in the last 5 years, you know, and then guys like Neighbors and Odunze start falling, maybe they're saying, okay, let's be a little patient here. Maybe a Brian Thomas does make it all the way down to us, and that fills it in. And conversely, I could see the Eagles making a run, especially if some of the top cornerbacks start to drop. But my gut instinct tells me I don't think you're going to see a lot of movement in the first round because, in the first round, you really want to come – if you don't have one, your team needs a quarterback, a left tackle, an edge rusher, and a number one receiver. And if you don't have one of those, this is your year to be in the first-round pick, with the possible exception of the edge rusher. So I think teams are going to be a little more patient because, again, I think you're going to see second-round talents going in three and four, and teams are going to want to sit on those assets.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there. Like, I think that, all the pregame hype and all the pundits like you and I and others in the draft community want to see movement because it's fun, and it's a game to us and we like to report on it. We like to talk in our community rooms about it. And it's a good time, but ultimately I think that, we saw a lot about that last year. And when there were moves, the moves weren't bold, right. Save for Carolina's move. And we'll get into that in a second. But outside of a few, the moves were up, the Steelers jumped up from 17 to 14 or whatever it was to get in front of the Jets to grab Broderick Jones. Or, you may see something like that again, where a team moves up, four or five spots later in the draft. But, it's just so heavy, and you see teams paying that price a lot. But let's – before I get to the Carolina Panthers.
You had raised the Steelers as a trade back possibility, and I know that's very popular in the Steeler fan community, and I understand that. They do have a lot of holes to fill, but if you look at them the last couple of years, they have a tendency to fall absolutely, completely head over heels with a player, and that's the player they absolutely want to walk away from the first round. Najee. There were other things that probably could have been a better use of the person. They were taking Najee. Kenny Pickett, they fell in love with Kenny Pickett, and they were taking him no matter what. Broderick Jones last year, fell in love with him, had to have him, made the little move up. I think this year they've fallen in love with Graham Burton, and that's their guy, and I think they would be terrified of the notion of them dropping back to, 25, 28, and then Dallas or Green Bay snapping him up. So I think the Steelers are going to stay put.
Well, that's a really good point, Emmett. And I'll say two things to that since we're on the subject. I mean, you and I had an offline conversation a couple of weeks ago about the Steelers and their penchant for trading up but not trading back. And I think that when we did that research, we saw it, I think the last time they actually traded back was almost 20 years ago to get Casey Hampton from Texas as a nose guard.
Great.
And they moved down three spots. So it wasn't like they knew that nose guards, no one was drafting nose guards in the first round at that point. And they got a good one, a guy that was, all pro and, borderline big player for them during those Roethlisberger years, early Roethlisberger years and helped them win a Super Bowl. So, there's that. So I think that the history's there. Now, we could argue that we've got a new sheriff in town, and Omar Khan doesn't necessarily act the way that Kevin Colbert did, or the Steelers' way is now the Omar Khan way, and we're not sure what he's going to do. We saw him move down last year later in the draft to pick up an extra pick that he had traded to move up, and this guy doesn't seem to have the same kind of – I'm not going to say he's in a rush to win a championship, but the guy knows that Tomlin's going into last year's contract. He's got some players that he wants to win now with. He thinks he can you know, he cobbled together a good enough defense. If he could just put enough of an offense on the field, they can be competitive, and that might be true. But you're right. Graham Barton from Duke could play every position on the offensive line. And Tomlin loves positional flexibility. So here's a guy who will likely be a center or at least an interior lineman at the next level, could kick out and play right tackle for them, and you know maybe do an understudy. They bring in a veteran center for a year and get him used to it. But this is a guy who also went to Duke, has the football IQ to play that position. But I would argue that it's really, really hard to draft a center in the first round. I mean, unless their name is Marquise Pouncey, it's just not what, you know, and so that's why I think if they do want someone like that, they could trade back. And, you know, and I would suggest that if they're going to do that, I think maybe a perfect trading partner for them might be Arizona, where Arizona is going to want to move up, especially if they move back and grab a receiver, grab someone else. Arizona is just one spot ahead of Buffalo, and to have them come up with the Steelers are still in range, and they could pick up a higher second-round pick. Maybe they swap second rounds, and they can grab Powers Johnson in the second round or grab a Zach Frazier in the second round and fill that void at center while still getting their tackle. Now, well, I'm not even saying that they'll get to go tackle, right? There might be a receiver there that they can't pass up, or there may be a corner there. I know that they love Quinyon Mitchell too, but you know, what are your thoughts on, now that we're talking about the Steelers? I don't want to digress, and I know you want to get in here. So I'll shut up, and what are your thoughts on those things?
Well, I think that's legit. But I think the big thing is, what is their mindset? I saw Daniel Jeremiah put something out today that, and it's been reported elsewhere, that the Steelers are really in an IU because they're in win now mode. And quite frankly, I don't see it. I'm sorry. I'm on record for a couple of years. The Steelers are mired in mediocrity because they don't know what they are. They're not one player away from a Super Bowl contender. I don't care what draft picks they make. They're going to be in contention for the 6-7 seed or out next year. So I think, do they realize that themselves? And, you know, then maybe you look at a Mims, knowing that it might take a year or two, and then he and Jones are Pro Bowlers for 10 years, but it'll take a couple of years. Are they a win now? Then, yeah, maybe you go for a wide receiver. You know, maybe you do go center because that's the glaring need. Just as long as they avoid the one draft that's going to make Steeler fans' blood run cold, please avoid the Emil Boris Chuck Lanza draft from years ago. Hey, here's an idea. Let's take two centers.
Well, you make a good point. Let's talk about Ayuk for a second. I know that's not necessarily about the draft, but if they go after Ayuk, if they really do, there's draft capital that's going to be going back and forth on that. And from what I'm understanding, you know, San Francisco's trying to sign Ayuk long term. And even though the Steelers would have Ayuk on a team-friendly deal this year, he's going to want an extension, and if you're talking about $25 million range for what, and for a receiver to make $25 million, and at top of that, I mean, George Pickens has proven to be a little bit of a prima donna, and he's been, let's just say outspoken about his lack of use last year, and I'll be diplomatic about that. Can you imagine them going out and getting an Ayuk and paying him before they pay, you know, Pickens? I just don't see it either. And I agree 100%. They are not one player away. Now, maybe Tomlin hasn't re-signed a contract. They haven't made an extension. This is his last hurrah, and they're trying. That's why the Wilson thing is happening. And they blew a ton of money on Patrick Queen, and they're doubling down everything that they need to do so that they can do that. Maybe in their head, and you and I might believe that's delusional, maybe in their head they see something we don't. I mean, they're professionals here. They're really good at their jobs, right? So I get it. And maybe there is something there with the Russell Wilson. Or maybe it's not Ayuk at all. Maybe it's Cortland Sutton. That's the other rumor that's been going around for a while. There's a guy that still has a team-friendly deal for the next 2 years and has a relationship and a rapport with Russell Wilson. I don't know if Denver would want to part with him, but – you know, ultimately, I mean, I think everybody understands Denver's in a rebuild right now. They're not going to go anywhere this year. So you know, maybe they are willing to do that. And maybe that's a little bit more palatable, not just from a player relationship perspective, but also a cap-friendly relationship. I look, the IU stuff is sexy, and everybody wants to take a bite of that one. But I'm not sure I'm biting. Like, I'm with you. I mean, if that happens, what do you give up a second for that? I think that's too – it's got to be a day three guy because you ultimately only have him for one season guaranteed. Yeah. So are you going to give up more than that and risk not re-signing him? That's a big, big risk.
I would say that, you know, second, if it's just straight up, I think it might be more of – their first third rounder and maybe a conditional 2025 that if they do re-sign them, they get a second in 2025 or something. I mean, you can get creative. But right. I'm just, if they bring in Ayuk and I give that about a 3% chance, grab your popcorn. Cause like you said, with Pickens is not going to, you know, he's already figured out he's the number one next year, and he's already got his thing. Because that's the other thing. Pickens goes in, you know, going into next season will be his last year, so he's eligible for an extension after the 24-25 season. You know, I know a lot of Steelers fans say, oh, they're going to have, you know, $80 million in cap space. They only have 27 players under contract for the 25 season. And if you bring in Ayuk, he's going to want $20 million. Pickens is going to want $20 million. If one of the quarterbacks goes off, they're going to want $35 to $40 million. Boy, your cap space goes away in a hurry. And again, I don't think they're significantly better. To me, I may be crazy, but I think in the NFL, it's easier to go from a bad or even awful team to good than it is to go from mediocre to good.
Yeah, well, let me play devil's advocate for a second. So let's say they make the move for Ayuk. I think of any receiver in this draft, Ayuk is probably second best behind Marvin Harrison Jr. You could make the argument that a Neighbors or an Adunze or even a Brian Thomas might be better than him longer term, but Ayuk is a really damn good receiver, right? And he's young, and you've got him for term if you do that and you pay that out. And let's say they give him a third that becomes a conditional two next year, however that works out for that. They still have a first, a second, and a third then. And they can fill some of those other voids. They still need a center. They still need a right tackle. They still need ostensibly a third receiver in a very deep receiver draft. And they can pick up a Malik Washington in round four or five and still be happy with that. But they still need another corner. And, you know, I think that the tackle draft here is a deep one. And maybe they go center tackle receiver, center tackle corner. And they don't need that receiver because they brought in Ayuk, or they can bring in a Tyler Boyd on a team-friendly deal, or somebody like a Hunter Renfrow on a team-friendly deal to fill in that void, or get a guy later in the draft. As part of that, does that work for you, or is that still like a no? It's still a stretch.
I'm still not wild about it because even with his deal this year, Ayuk basically eats up most of their cap. You'd have to make moves just to sign your draft class. And I know the big thing is, well, let's redo or extend Hayward. And this is how they got in trouble with Roethlisberger. They kept kicking the can down the road. There's really nothing left for them to squeeze out a Watts contract. Yeah, they can do that with Fitzpatrick, and he's been playing long enough. That won't be an issue. But again, they just keep repeating the same cycle. I've said it on more than one occasion. They keep reminding me of George Jetson on the treadmill.
You said something there that really makes sense. You said, because Khan was the capologist during those Roethlisberger years. So he lived through that, and maybe he learned his lesson. Maybe he doesn't care. I don't know, but that's a really good point, really valid point.
Yeah. And, you know, players, especially players in the pit, when they start getting soft tissue injuries in their mid-30s, those tend to reoccur with greater frequency and greater severity. I hope future Hall of Famer Craig Hayward plays all 17 games and has a Pro Bowl season, but if you were asking me to go down to Rivers Casino and put a couple chocolate chip cookies on him playing the whole year, I ain't doing it.
Yeah. Hey, look, we're coming to the end of the show, and I have time, I think, for one more question because I want to throw this out to you for a reason. I know that you're writing for Draft Carolina now, which is the affiliate in Charlotte and Raleigh for Draft Nation. And so I want to talk about the potential of teams that are in the top of the second round maybe moving back up into the first. I think Carolina has 2 seconds. Do you see them trying to jump up into the bottom part of the first, or do you see the Raiders or someone else trying to move up and grab one of those quarterbacks that they kind of let slide? Do you see anybody moving into the first round, by giving up some of that draft capital they've gotten in round two?
I do, because of the fifth-year option. Now, for strictly personal reasons, I want Carolina to move up into the first round because they don't have a first-round pick. And if you are going to our Draft Carolina party at Ink and Ivy, Thursday the 25th, starting at 7 o'clock, to watch me and others
well played,
give
Emma.
Our expert take, it would be great if Carolina had a first-round pick for us to talk about. Practically, I don't see it. If anything, they might move back to add a few more mid-round picks because they need so much. But I think you're 100% correct. Keep an eye on the Raiders, especially, again, if Penix or Nix are sitting there at 20, and Baltimore would be good because Baltimore loves to do this. Baltimore loves to trade out of the first round and get more mid-round picks this year and get a higher pick next year. So I'll make my bold prediction. The Raiders swapping with the Ravens. Raiders get back in the first round to select one of the either Penix or Nix.
Yeah, I think that, Penix, I'm not sure that there's another team. Like, once you get past the top four and you're sitting there looking at Denver and the Raiders, Denver doesn't have that second round. They don't have a choice. They're either going to have to take their quarterback there or they're gonna pass on it and end up playing Stidham or going out and getting a Tannehill to babysit for a year or something like that. Maybe those cards are already in motion. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes there. But you're right. I think that the Raiders do have the ammunition to move back in and grab their guy. And they can wait. And that way it's not that expensive for them. They can still get their corner. They can still get their edge rusher. They can still get, even though they drafted one last year, I know that's something they've also started to look at. They could still go and get someone that's going to improve their defensive line or their offensive line. They've got a lot of holes too, but they don't have to pick that Penix or Nix at that spot. They can wait and let them fall and get in at the end of the round. And I think that you've identified a nice trade partner for them in the Ravens. And the Ravens, don't have as many holes to fill, and they're not moving that far back in order to get additional draft capital down the road. And as much as it pains me to say it, the Ravens have been incredible at drafts. For them, it wouldn't surprise me to see them jump themselves out and pick up the, first round worthy guys in round two and doing that. And they just have a tendency to do it. So my hat's off to them. And I think you nailed it. But as we come into the last minute or so of the show, why don't you remind everybody where they can find you, where they can read your stuff, and tell them one more time about your Draft Carolina event?
Yes, thank you very much. You can find my stuff at draftcarolina.com, and it's a lot of everything. There's some NCAA basketball there. Did a lot of stories on the March Madness. A lot of Carolina Hurricanes stuff. I've got some minor league baseball stuff coming up about the Durham Bulls and the Charlotte Knights. I've done some MLS stuff. So there's a little bit of everything. And then we have our draft party, the same night as the Pittsburgh draft party. And I think Indianapolis might be doing something. But we will have some former pros telling their stories, Joe DeLamalore, Captain Munerlin, Anthony Wright, Donnell Wolford, and Adrian Morrell, and then analysts Ricky Range, John Ellis, and Steve Israel, who will also be telling his story, and then your humble little bomb thrower, me. will be on stage. Ink and Ivy, Thursday, 7 o'clock, DraftCarolina.com. Benefits the Bronco Nagurski Charlotte Touchdown Club.
Again, Emmett, thank you very much. And again, thank you very much to our longtime sponsor, iHeartMedia, where you can find all your podcasts all for free all the time. Emmett, welcome back anytime. Good luck at the draft party, and I'll talk to you afterwards. Let's do a postmortem on it.
I'm looking forward to it. Thanks a lot.
All right.